Okay, it's great to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Peter Schiff from Euro-Pacific Capital. Well, my featured guest today says that gold will be the trade of the year. Peter Schiff is President and Chief Global Strategist of Euro-Pacific Capital and best-selling author. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, you know, in a recent article, you take the mainline press to task over their assessment of inflation versus deflation. You say that the powers that be have it all wrong. Inflation is the cause of all kinds of trouble in our economy. High prices are only a symptom of the inflation. It's not the cause, though. Could you please tell folks what's behind these higher prices, that it's more than likely monetary expansion?
Not everybody is blaming everything on the weather these days, and the problem is it's raining money, right? That is the problem with the weather. But, you know, the government is trying to launch a campaign, a fear campaign about deflation or lowflation. The government is trying to convince us that rising prices are necessary for prosperity, that rising prices stimulate consumption, they stimulate demand. As a result, they lead to hiring and economic growth, and that if prices aren't rising, that the economies are going to implode. And the theoretical explanation for that is people won't spend if they don't think prices are going to go up, that they'll just postpone their purchases. But if they think prices are going to go up, then everybody will rush out to spend before the price hikes, and all that extra spending is what's going to grow the economy. And it is utter nonsense. There is nothing to fear from stable prices. There's nothing to fear from falling prices. In fact, falling prices are the byproduct of a healthy growing economy. That's what healthy growing economies produce, is lower prices. Because as you increase production, you increase the supply of goods, you find more innovative ways to produce goods so that the price of the goods can come down. And it's falling prices that leads to higher living standards, because what makes products affordable is prices going down. The reason that people are poor is because they can't afford to buy the things that they want or the things that they need. Well, the way you alleviate poverty is to bring prices down. And when prices come down, people can afford things, and now they have a better standard of living. And so the history of America, if you study 19th century America, the history is falling prices. That's the secret to our success, is that capitalism brought prices down. And even in this century, you can see pockets of falling prices in consumer electronics. Why do we all have cell phones? Why are they so ubiquitous now in our society? Why does my 11-year-old have an iPhone? Because the price came down.
You recall Gordon Gekko's mobile phone was, all the rage back in, 1988?
The fact that Gordon Gekko had one, it was a novelty. It was a toy for the rich. You had to be Gordon Gekko to afford one. That was the point. Now, according to the government, it would have been better if the price of cell phones went up, if Gordon Gekko's phone was the cheapest and they just got more expensive. No! You know, this is the government is trying to convince us to fear falling prices because they want rising prices. So they might as well get us to enjoy what they're about to do to us, right? They want, you know, it's like trying to make the bitter tasting medicine go down. That the government wants us to be excited about inflation. The government wants us to think that they've done us a favor by sparing us the pain associated with prices going down, so that when prices go up, will be relieved. And they can say, this is great news. The cost of living is going up. This is great. Good job, Federal Reserve.
Well, no, exactly, because they've convinced us that by owning a debt check, okay, then we've taken on a huge amount of debt and mortgages and all the rest of it and filled the house with devices and furniture that we didn't even pay for. Half of that's on credit.
It's kind of like almost like, you remember that book, Fahrenheit 451, you know, where the firemen, remember, the firemen were there to, they were there to start fires, right? And they're saying, you know, didn't firemen used to put out fires? It's kind of like the Federal Reserve now, you know, now they're trying to create inflation. Their job is to create inflation. But at one time, theoretically, their job was to fight inflation. Now their job is to create it. That's the kind of world that we're living in. Meanwhile, you know, this idea that people will, you know, not buy things if they think they can get them cheaper in the future. An easy way to refute that is look at the use of credit cards. How many people in America that can't afford something buy it anyway by using a credit card? Because when they do that, they add about 10 or 15 or 20% to the cost because they have to pay the interest. So if they really were so concerned about saving money, they wouldn't use their credit cards. They would just wait until they had the money and then buy the goods a year or two later. We all want low prices. The only people who don't want low prices are debtors. See, because if debtors have borrowed a lot of money, they want inflation. They want to be able to pay back the money they borrowed with inflated dollars. So if you've borrowed a lot of money, then yes, a lot of inflation will help you out. But it's not a coincidence, you know, who is the biggest debtor of them all? Who's borrowed more money than anybody on the planet? The government. So that's why the government wants inflation. Of course, the government is also pinning its economic hopes on asset bubbles, the wealth effect, rising stock prices, rising real estate prices. They need inflation to sustain that. So because the government wants to keep inflating the bubbles, because the government wants to inflate away its debts, right? That's why it needs inflation. You know, another reason they need inflation is to lower the minimum wage. You know, they impose the minimum wage, which creates unemployment because it prices unskilled laborers out of the market. And what they do is they create inflation to reduce the value of wages so that employers can afford to hire the people that the minimum wage law made unemployable. So it's like a government bailout.
Well, you also point out that the mainline thinking promotes inflation, you know, to keep, as you mentioned, unemployment low, but that this is really an illusion. If prices were allowed to fall to their equilibrium level, workers would have more disposable income, and then that income would be spent on goods and services, and this would help right the economy. Wouldn't this reduce the magnitude and regularity of our economic downturns, Peter?
We wouldn't even have economic downturns if the government wasn't manipulating the money supply. You know, the business cycle is a byproduct of government manipulation. It's the monetary policy that's behind it. But if we really want true prosperity that raises the standard of living of the poorest among us and the middle class, we need capitalism. We need to go back to what worked in the 19th century, which is limited government, freedom, free enterprise, sound money, limited government, which means no taxes or very low taxes, certainly no income taxes or payroll taxes. We want taxes that don't do economic harm. Sales taxes, for example, you know, import taxes, stuff like that. Taxes that you can pay without thinking about it. Taxes where you don't need financial planning, where you don't need accountants and lawyers, you know, and, you know, stuff like that. And where the government doesn't need an army of tax collectors and tax preparers. You know, we got to eliminate the entire industry of financial planning. It is a waste. It is a waste of our resources to try to figure out how to protect our money from government theft.
Now, you also offer a panacea, though, for inflation. You say that legislators should implement a balanced budget. You've talked about the Fed, but you haven't mentioned the balanced budget to avoid debt there. What do you think?
Yeah, well, if the Fed wasn't monetizing the debt, we would have a balanced budget because interest rates would be too high. The government couldn't afford to borrow. So the government and the Federal Reserve are working hand in hand to rob Americans blind. But those of us, you know, there are people who say we need inflation because governments have all this debt, and so inflation will ease that burden. Yes, but the solution isn't to create inflation to wipe out government debt. The solution is for governments not to go into debt in the first place, and then they won't need inflation to wipe it out.
Moving on to the precious metal sector, you know, so far this year, it's up by about 5%, but the media is once again bashing the metals. They're discussing the rally only in terms of last year's reaction. It looks like they're missing the significant fact that the bottom might be in place here.
Yeah, everybody wants to talk about how last year was the worst year for gold in 20 or 30 years, and that this is just a dead cat bounce. You know, the only reason that gold sold off so hard in the second half of 2013 was because so many people jumped to the wrong conclusion at the same time. The Fed said that they were going to end QE, and a bunch of people believed it. They actually believed that the Fed could not only stop buying treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, but it could actually start selling the ones that it already owns, and somehow it could do that without spiking interest rates and collapsing the economy, which is a fantasy. It can't be done. So the people who sold gold did it based on a false premise. But they all did it at the same time. And you had years and years of buying liquidated in a matter of months, and so the price dropped. But I think all of the gold that the speculators unloaded in the second half of 2013 has been bought by entities that have no intention of ever selling it. Once the market turns around, and I think it's, you know, it probably has already bottomed, and we're surprising everybody with the rally thus far in 2014, which I think will gather momentum as the year progresses, especially when we get more of the economic data coming out this spring, which does not show an improvement over the winter, in fact, which may even continue to deteriorate, because everybody has been dismissing all the bad news as if it was solely related to the cold weather. But when they realize that it wasn't the weather, it was that the economy was legitimately slowing down and the weather was a minimal, if any, factor, then more and more people are going to realize that the Fed is not going to end QE, that they're going to halt the taper and, in fact, reverse course, which I think they will do before the end of the year in an attempt to avoid recession or stimulate the economy or prop up the sagging stock and real estate markets, then I think gold takes off. And a lot of people who sold it are going to want to buy it back. The problem is going to be, where are they going to get the metal?
Speaking of where they're going to get the metal, you talk about the StreetTrax Gold ETF, GLD, reversing course, accumulating significant bullion in its stockpile. You know, it's not the only ETF out there. There are numerous gold ETFs around the world.
Oh, yeah.
They've got to buy back the gold they've sold off. And if China absorbed in Asia, that is, the Asian nations, absorb much of that stockpile, I mean, this could be a huge impetus sending the metals higher.
Who really has to buy it back? The shorts. There are a lot of short sellers in this market. They got into the market late last year. In fact, I remember watching, you know, television on CNBC. They'd bring up a portfolio manager, and they'd ask them, well, what are you doing? And almost everybody was saying, well, we're short gold. And I had never, in all my years, heard so many people who have probably never traded gold come out and confess that they're now short. Because everybody believed that it was a free trade, that it was a no-brainer, that if you shorted gold, you'd make 20 or 30% because it was going to collapse, you know, for sure. And now they're all stuck in this trade. They're all losing. They're on the wrong side of the market. They're hoping that things turn around. But at some point, as the price goes higher and higher and higher, and they can't endure the pain anymore, they're going to be forced to cover these short positions. And when the shorts look to cover, again, who are they going to buy from when they've been supplying the metal to the market? It's the shorts that have been enabling people to buy gold, except they've been selling gold that they don't even own.
But you compare gold to the price of Dow, you know, the equities index, and you see, in order for it to get back to its historical average, either gold must move higher or the Dow must decline sharply, and you seem to think that both will occur. Will investors roll their stock gains into the precious metals?
Yeah, well, I don't know how much the Dow is going to decline. So I think most of that is going to be made up with gold prices going up, right? I mean, not so much the Dow going down, because I do believe that they'll print enough money to put a floor beneath the stock market. So I don't think, you know, they're going to meet at 2,000 or 3,000, right? I think they're going to meet at a much higher level. By the time they're 1-to-1 again, it'll probably be with gold, you know, with a Dow, you know, 5,000 to 10,000, if not higher. So I'm not looking for a collapse in the Dow, but I, you know, the Dow could certainly move down. The Nasdaq, I think, is the most vulnerable there, because there you have, you know, so much hype and so much fluff in the stocks that are in that index. So there's more downside for these, you know, momentum pie in the sky, no earnings, you know, all sizzle, no steak type stocks. But, you know, people just should be buying gold. The gold stocks, I think, are, you know, for people who really want to, you know, swing for the fences, there's tremendous upside in the mining stocks, because they're priced for, you know, collapsed gold prices. You know, when gold prices don't collapse, when they, in fact, go way up, these assets have to be totally repriced, because they have to be looked at in a totally different light.
Oh, yeah. No, as a sector, I mean, we're talking about very fairly valued price-to-earnings ratios. You know, take a look at, like, Netflix, Google, Apple, and many others. I mean, they're priced for perfection, and we're starting to see the fallout there. So,
I mean, I looked through my own portfolio, and about, you know, just about the only stocks that I have, you know, that are lower than I paid for them are gold stocks. You know, so all the other stocks I have gone up, and some of my gold stocks have gone up. They're the best values.
You also question whether or not the Fed can sustain the asset bubbles if it simply supplies enough air in the form of freshly minted QE cash and zero interest rates. Could the economy be moving from too big to fail into the realm of too big to bail?
It is too big to bail, and that's why I think the Fed thinks the bubbles are too big to pop. That's why they want to keep them inflated, but they can't do it forever. They can't keep printing money without collapsing the dollar, and I think that's the real collateral damage. The Fed will keep printing money to keep the bond market propped up, to keep the equity markets and the housing market propped up, to keep the government in business, to enable them to keep borrowing and spending. So they'll keep printing and printing and printing until the bottom drops out of the dollar, which will happen eventually. It should have already happened. But, you know, the world has a lot more confidence in our money than they should. But, you know, eventually, you know, they won't. And the confidence will fail. And that's the crisis that we're heading to. And that's the one that people need to be prepared for. What we needed was lower housing prices. But what we got was a reflated bubble where you have hedge funds and private equity guys speculating in the single-family home market. You have home ownership rates plunging to 20- and 30-year lows as hedge funds are leveraged up with empty houses. So the government has reflated a bubble that will burst, you know, as interest rates rise and when these hedge funds look to unload these properties that they can't rent out. Meanwhile, nobody can afford to buy them either. So, look, we're perched on a very precarious ledge, and they're going to just keep printing money because they're afraid of stopping. And I think it's all a bluff, and I don't even know if the Fed believes what they're saying with respect to being able to stop the QE. Maybe they don't. Maybe they believe it. Maybe they're just pretending. But they're going to stop. The data is going to come out, and it's going to be too negative, and the Fed's going to be going to have to do something, and they're going to do what they do, which is print money. Even though it doesn't work, that's the only tool in their shed. In their box, right? So they'll keep using it.
No, I can confirm everything you've said. You know, industry insiders here on the show in the housing sector claim that the, as you say, hedge funds, and not just hedge funds, many of these other entities that are gobbling up the McMansion debt checks, they plan to dump those on the market as soon as they move a bit higher and rates start to ratchet up.
Sell to who? There's no one to sell to. They're the main buyers. They can't turn around and sell. It's just like the Fed. The Fed has got all these bonds and mortgage-backed securities. It's got a $4 trillion balance sheet, and people think they can turn around and become a seller.
Well, maybe the government will buy it up, and they'll sell us back our homes.
Remind your listeners that the new version of the real crash just came out last week. That's the real crash, America's coming bankruptcy, how to save yourself and your future and your country. Right? It's got over 100 new pages, so it's 444 pages now. It's the brand new, fully revised and updated version of the real crash. So pick up a copy, even if you read the original. It's worth buying a new one to get the extra 100 pages. And don't forget, I'm doing my own radio show, the Peter Schiff Show, every weekday from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. Schiffradio.com is the URL. You can listen live, or in fact, you can go to that website any time of day and listen to the most recent show for free.
We're going to have links to both on the webpage today.
Thank you.